This is the program about Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom, and welcome back. We're very glad to have you. I'm Sabina Qureshi, broadcasting from Edmonton, Canada, and with me today is Camille Lawang from New York, USA. Hi, Camille.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. We're going to do part two of a show about the evolution of humanity. And in the subtitle, we say stepping into our divinity. And that's a deliberate mm-hmm. part of the title, because we're going to talk about who we really are, what our nature is. And just before we carry on, I'd like to say that we will be doing a 30-minute meditation at the end of the program. So please join us if you're interested. And also, you can follow us on YouTube. You can follow us on Facebook for updates all the time. And once again, thanks for being here. So Camille, do you want to jump in and tell us a little bit? What is this going to be about?
Okay, I'm going to pick up where I left off in the first part, which was in September. And if you're interested in seeing that, you can on the YouTube channel called
What in the World is Happening Now?
It's episode number 79 under Live. So, yeah, the evolution of humanity for me is just a really interesting topic because there's so much more to explore about who we are, about humanity, that goes beyond the physical form. And the Ageless Wisdom Teachings, which is a very ancient body of spiritual teachings, offers some interesting ideas about what makes us us and how we've changed over time. So in part one, we've talked about several aspects of the Ageless Wisdom Teachings as it relates to the evolution of human consciousness. We presented the planes of existence and related it to how the human being is made up from the dense physical plane up to the monadic plane, which is a much finer high vibration spiritual plane. We described the human being as being made up of a spark of God at the monadic level. This is our divine self and who we are essentially, and a vehicle, the physical body, the emotional body, and the mental body. And then we have the soul, which serves as a go-between, an intermediary.
Camille, can I just interrupt you for a sec? I want to just ask a question about this. You said that the monadic level, the spark of God, is a much finer level. So you're talking about vibration, rates of vibration?
I'm talking about matter, levels of matter. I mean, the physical plane is the densest level, and it has the matter on that plane vibrates at a lower level than the ones above it. So as you go higher and higher on this chart, the planes of matter vibrate at a higher rate.
So they're vibrating faster.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So when you use the word lower and higher, it's not like a value judgment or anything. It's simply talking about a rate of vibration, a speed, in fact, of vibration.
Right.
And so when you talked about the soul being the intermediary, is that because, and I'm just guessing here, that it would be because if the spark of God on the monadic plane is vibrating at a very fast rate, mm-hmm. whereas our vehicles, the physical, emotional, mental body, are vibrating at slower rates.
A much different rate, yeah.
So the two can't really intermesh somehow, like almost like, you know, gears, teeth of a gear, like on a bicycle. You know, they can't mesh together because they're going at different speeds. So that's what the soul does. The soul bridges.
Yeah, the soul is a go between. Like it's the middle. It's higher. It vibrates higher than our vehicle, mm-hmm. but not as high, not as fast as the spark of God. So the soul steps down the qualities of the our divine self in such a way that it can eventually
express those qualities on the personality level, the level of our vehicle.
Okay, so in fact, what you're saying here is that we are sparks of God. We actually,
yes,
that's who we are, in fact.
That is who we are, essentially. We are little gods in the making.
Okay.
We explained that. And then we also gave a synopsis of our 18 and a half million years as human beings on this planet. And we describe very briefly the root races that mark phases in our collective development. We also talked about the existence of a spiritual kingdom on Earth, and we described the masters of wisdom who make up this kingdom and their qualities, and we talked a little bit about their methods for overseeing our evolution. We concluded last time by describing the process of evolution for us, which entails the soul gradually gaining control over the physical body, then the astral or emotional body, and then mental body. And that people can speed up their progress through service and meditation. So we can continue here with the two laws that help to propel evolution. So we have the law of rebirth or reincarnation and the law of karma or cause and effect. So because it takes such a long time for the soul to establish contact with and gain control over the threefold personality, we need a lot of time to do this. And so we incarnate over and over again, hundreds of thousands of times, according to our information. And gradually we develop, we evolve. We gain experiences, a wide variety of experiences. We learn skills and abilities.
So when we talk about rebirth or reincarnation and the fact that this happens hundreds of thousands of times, I'm assuming that we will have the opportunity through all of these incarnations to experience a multitude of different types of lives, different types of situations, being different types of people. That's fascinating because our tendency is to identify so much with the person that we are right now. You know, I'm a woman, I'm Canadian, I'm from this place, I'm like this, I'm like that. And yet, according to this information, I've been many, many, many thousands of people over time, over thousands of years. It's almost like science fiction.
Yeah, I mean, according to this information we all have, and that's how we evolve. We evolve through experiences and doing and participating in life. So we have been other people previously, and we are who we are now because this is the level that we're at that we need to. This is a life that will provide us with the life, the lessons that would be most beneficial for us to learn at this time.
And so what about the law of karma or cause and effect?
So yeah, the law of karma works, simply put, for every action that you take, you set into motion a cause, and the causes have effects, and these effects ripple out. And they make up our lives for better or for worse. And because we live all these lives, we develop karmic bonds with people. And sometimes we develop karmic knots with people that need to be worked out. So these two laws work in tandem. And we eventually learn to live. We have to live in right relationship with each other. That is the goal.
So I'm guessing that this, when you talk about developing bonds of karma with people, that I owe somebody because they did me a good turn, or I did somebody harm, so I owe them to make up to them, and vice versa. Is that what a karmic bond would be?
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right. Both.
Yeah.
According to the masters, we actually make more positive karma than negative. So that's a nice thing to know.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Well, and in a way it makes sense because I would guess that the vast majority of people every single day waking up in the morning want to do better than the day before. I mean, it's kind of built into our nature, this drive to to achieve or to do better, to
an aspiration.
Aspiration, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So with that in mind, yeah, these two laws propel us forward, and we have over 8 billion people alive in the world today. We've reached 8 billion sometime in November of last year. It's pretty staggering.
Yeah.
This slide shows 5 initiations. These are great expansions of consciousness that each person must go through to complete the journey in the human kingdom. So these initiations take place during the final several lives of the person's journey. So I'll explain the first initiation. This involves having gained an advanced amount of control over one's physical body, which we developed and perfected over time during the Lemurian root race that lasted for the first 6 million years of our time here on Earth. So this means that the appetites for the body, for eating, drinking, sex, sleep, and rest, these must no longer dominate the person, but must be done in moderation and under control of the soul. So we have approximately 800,000 people who have taken the first initiation. But in addition to that, there are a few million more people who are getting close to taking the first initiation.
So really, proportionally, like 800,000 compared to 8 billion is a very small number, isn't it?
It's a small fraction, yes.
It's a very small fraction. Mm-hmm. But you're saying everybody is moving towards like further development, so that regardless of where we are in our development, we're all going forward all
the
time. Yes,
you can't go back. No one goes backwards. You're all going forward.
Okay.
It's just a matter of the rate.
I have a question. Centauri, thank you for asking, has asked, how much in our lives is due to karmic bonds and how much is from random occurrence? Is there a random occurrence, I guess, is another way of saying it too.
I'm not sure. I think before we incarnate, our soul, you know, decides who our parents are going to be, what lessons we want to learn, and sort of create certain conditions that we need to bring us into the lessons that we need to learn. So there's some of that, how we handle the conditions that we find ourselves in.
Well, and you know, I'm thinking about the question about random occurrences. In one way, you know, I remember when people first started talking about climate change and about the way everything's connected, I recall there was this, I think that was before the time of memes, but it was kind of like a meme at the time. The idea that a butterfly moving its wing in one place would have an effect that could be translated into, you know, weather patterns somewhere else, thousands of miles away. And it was just an example of how every little thing has an effect on everything else. And that was, these were biologists talking about this. They weren't talking about consciousness. Mm-hmm. But in a way, I think we could translate that idea into looking at everything that happens as the result of choices that are being made by everybody all the time. And in nature, also all the living beings are, you know, making choices, though we wouldn't think of it as a choice the way we use the word choice. But, you know, every little animal or insect is doing something. So maybe there are no random occurrences. Maybe everything is the result of a choice.
I was processing the word random. Mm-hmm. And after, hearing you talk, I think that, you know, something that may seem random to you may not necessarily be random, but maybe the outcome of causes that you don't know about.
Right. And they can be causes through time as well. Like maybe suddenly part of a wall collapses, but it's due to a weakness that's been developing through time, you know, because of how it was constructed, for example, something like that.
That's an interesting way to think of it. Yes.
But I would have to say, I would like to just address the question directly again, because I think it's a really interesting one. So the question was, how much of what we experience is due to karmic results and how much are random occurrences? My honest answer would be, I don't know, because I really don't. But my guess is that there's probably much less of what we consider random. And maybe there is no such thing as really a random occurrence. But I don't think I know that. And I'm not sure who does, actually.
Yeah, maybe the masters would know.
They might know, yeah.
But that's an interesting question.
Yeah, it is.
I can understand why someone would wonder that.
Yeah.
So just to pick up, people who are getting ready for the first initiation, they have to purify their bodies. And so they will choose a vegetarian diet. Meat has a lowering effect on the body. So one can see in the world a lot more people are choosing a vegetarian diet.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I recall being plagued by I was having a lot of angry reactions a few years ago. And at the time, I was eating meat, not often, but I was eating it. And I really struggled with this tendency with anger. And then I thought, what if I just stopped eating meat? Let's see what happens. And it made a huge difference, a really huge difference. So I think there is something to what you're saying, that there's a real effect on our vibration.
So let's go on to the second initiation. And this one requires control of the astral or emotional vehicle, which was developed and perfected during the Atlantean root race, which spanned 12.5 million years. The astral nature is so powerful that this is said to be the most difficult initiation to achieve. This is because we are very enmeshed in the fogs of desire, which is also called glamour. And this glamour distorts our ability to perceive and respond to reality correctly. It has a distorting quality to it. So to resolve this, the soul, through the use of the mind, has to gain control of the emotional body. And then in doing so, this is a slow process in which we free ourselves from emotional bondage so that we no longer become so easily overwhelmed by our emotions and desires. The third initiation, which has been taken by 2,000 to 3,000 people, involves gaining control over the lower aspect of the mental body, the mental plane, which has to do with concrete thought and reasoning. This involves dissolving the illusions of the mental plane with the light of the soul.
So the illusions of the mental plane, that would that mean ideas that we have about reality that aren't actually true, that type of thing?
Yeah. I mean, if it's pretty easy to observe that one can take themselves down all kinds of, I call them thought tunnels, you know, just streams of thought. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts can go in all kinds of directions, and then you can believe them because you thought them, and it's, you know, based on reasoning, perhaps, but they may not be true. So it's through the light of the soul that can disperse the illusion on the mental plane of these erroneous thoughts. So another thing is that one must demonstrate an integrated personality. So your physical body, your emotional body, and your mental body will have become integrated, working, you know, together under the impulse of the soul. And it is the task of our current root race, which is the Aryan root race, to develop and perfect the mental body. So this is a work in progress. The fourth initiation, of which there are approximately 450, is called the renunciation. The person who reaches this level has increased the vibration of their body high enough so that the soul is no longer needed. The soul is then reabsorbed back into the monad, the spark of God, and our spark of God works directly through our personality. And then after that is the fifth initiation. At this point, the person has become completely free from the pull of matter, and they no longer need to incarnate as a human being. They have learned, they have mastered themselves at all the levels of a human being, and they've learned all the lessons that they can learn on Earth. So they move fully into the spiritual kingdom.
So a couple of things. One is just my own sort of question / comment. As you talk about these initiations and the ways in which we grow and become free from the pull or the effect of the different bodies on us, I understand there's also a change in the makeup of our bodies themselves. I know I've read this in Benjamin Krem's books that slowly the atoms in our bodies are replaced by subatomic matter or light. And
right.
So literally our bodies are changing over time. And I recall the one concrete type of proportion that he gave was, he said that a person who's taken the fourth initiation has a body that's 3/4 light and 1/4 physical matter. And I think that's really interesting just to contemplate that as we go through our daily lives, that this process is taking place and we're actually mm-hmm. changing, you know, literally
yeah.
on the level of the physical
right.
atoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that is the gradual moving towards and into the spiritual kingdom, which is being light. So you're slowly becoming that.
Yeah. And then there's a question from Billy Sevchuk. Thank you, Billy, for asking. I'm glad to have you. So Billy's asked, will human evolution also have a positive impact on the lives of the rest of the animals on the planet? And if so, in what ways?
Yeah, I think so. The human kingdom has a stimulating effect on the animal kingdom, and the animals that are more highly evolved are the ones that have spent the most amount of time around us because of our mental activity, our
right.
mental influence is influencing them.
And so that's like elephants, camels, dogs,
cats, yeah, our pets.
Horses, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and from what you're saying, the way that you're talking about how our mental activity, because we have a quality of mind that animals don't have, that those energies stimulate their evolution. And I understand that their energies stimulate the plant kingdom, and the plant kingdom's energies stimulate the mineral kingdom. So there's a constant
right.
flow of this stimulating process going on through
yeah.
all the kingdoms.
Yes. Each kingdom grew out of the one below it, but each kingdom is also being stimulated by the one above it. So it's an interesting system.
Yeah, it is.
But everything's interrelated. So yeah, the animal kingdom is also evolving as well. Where was I? Oh,
about
right?
the masters, I think.
Yeah, so when a person becomes a master, most of them go elsewhere for higher learning. But a certain number of them remain here on Earth to help oversee humanity and the rest of the kingdoms. So the masters are also overseeing the evolution of the animal kingdom and the lower ones. So it's not just the human kingdom. Our relationship to animals will change in the future, become a more beneficial one. So we have 63 masters associated with this Earth evolution. And these masters work in accordance with a plan that has been set by our planetary logos. And this is the being that ensouls our planet. So these people, these masters have completed their evolutionary journey on Earth. They are free from the pull of matter, and they're also known as the Lords of Compassion, also the Elder Brothers. They are harmless. They create no negative karma, and they don't infringe anyone's free will. infringing a person's free will is against spiritual law, so they make sure not to do that. And their consciousness resides on the plane above the mental plane, which is the Buddhic plane, the plane of intuition, where the connection between all things is easily apparent to them.
And when you talk about the fact that they don't infringe anyone's free will, that kind of seems like an important point to me, because I'm guessing that we probably do that all the time without being aware of it.
We do, yes. And sometimes we are aware of it. We do it anyway.
Yeah, true enough.
Yeah. So here's some ways that the masters help us to progress. They manage the energies that impinge our planet to protect us from harmful ones and to send others our way that would stimulate us and help us forward our evolution. Energies like that include love and will. They place ideas that would advance life on Earth. They place them on the mental plane, and then members of the human race who are sensitive enough and work can reach that level, pick up on these ideas, and then they can bring them into the world. And some of these manifest as inventions and technologies, ways of doing things, structures and solutions to problems.
I just want to ask about the mental plane. So this is like a plane of matter where mental matter is, or
mental
thought.
Matter, the plane of thoughts.
Thoughts
and ideas.
And so the fact that, for example, two people working on a problem in different parts of the world might come up with a solution, the same solution at the same time, without having been in contact with each other, might simply be that they've both connected to that mental plane and kind of received the same idea. So I think of a radio with an antenna. So maybe our minds are kind of like antenna. We're depending on where our antenna reach to, that's what we will be able to connect with and receive.
Right. Yeah. And I think of the late 1800s when inventors were developing, were working with electricity and developing forms of electricity, communication, light. These things were, there was almost like a competition between people in the U.S. and different parts of Europe working on similar things, coming up with the inventions at more or less the same time that were similar but a little different. So that also makes me think of recent stimulation by the masters that has been towards the growth of various forms of intercommunication to bring us closer together on the outer plane so that we can parallel more closely the unity, the inner unity that exists on the inner plane, the spiritual plane. And this is taking the form of the press, travel, radio, TV, and the internet, and perhaps the more recent developments of like social media and texting, quicker ways, all the different ways we have of communicating with each other instantly. This has been the result of a stimulation by the masters to bring us closer together.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing how much we talk to each other these days.
Mm-hmm.
We're constantly in communication, in fact.
Right. Do you want to go to the next slide?
Well, yeah, teachings. Okay. That's right. And I just wanted to mention a quote by Victor Hugo from The Future of Man, because I think it relates to the idea of ideas themselves and how powerful ideas are and how they can change our lives, like what you were just talking about with all these ways we have now to communicate with each other. All of that first existed as an idea, and then people had to figure out how to make it real. And he said, "Nothing else in the world, not all the armies, is so powerful as an idea whose time has come."
Mm-hmm.
I love that quote. I think it's very powerful.
Yeah. And it makes me think that these ideas, in all likelihood, were placed by a master that people were ready to take and run with.
Right. Yeah.
So another thing that the masters do is they bring teachings directly to humanity from time to time. And this is a list of some of the historic figures that brought some important idea or lesson for humanity to absorb and put into practice. A master can come personally, but usually they have worked through a disciple, someone who is a high initiate, a spiritually evolved person.
So you're talking really about a relationship between a master as a teacher,
yes,
and someone else who's a disciple or student of that master.
Right, right. So, for instance, Buddha worked through Mithra and Prince Gautama, and the teachings that these two people brought, they gave rise to religions, Mithraism and Buddhism. The master Maitreya worked through Krishna and Jesus. And Krishna gave rise to Hinduism, and Jesus gave rise to Christianity, or the teachings of Jesus and Krishna gave rise to the religions that were formed around those teachings. And then when Jesus became a master, he in turn worked through the disciple Muhammad, and the religion of Islam was created around those teachings.
So, and as you point out here, Jesus first was a disciple or student of Maitreya, and then later became a master himself. So I'm guessing, for example, all of these people right now that we're looking at on the screen, all these disciples, Mithra, Prince Gautama, Krishna, Jesus, and Muhammad, they must all be masters by now.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
So these teachers come when humanity is in crisis. They will come when humanity is ready for new teachings. And they will also come during transitions between ages, cosmic ages. And we are living in a time right now when all three of these conditions are in place. Firstly, we are certainly experiencing a series of overlapping crises. We have climate change. We have a pandemic that is still ongoing. There is the rise of fascism around the world, war, violence, refugees, huge and increasing wealth disparities, racial injustice, and all other forms of injustice. The world is rife with these problems. Benjamin Krem, who is the source of our information, described it very well in this quote. He said, "We are experiencing a spiritual crisis that is focused through the political and economic fields. That spiritual crisis can only be resolved by the resolution of our political and economic problems, which are based in a false sense of separation. If we would evolve, develop as a race, we must realize our oneness, that we are brothers and sisters of one family under the one divine source and identical with that source."
That's a very powerful message.
Yeah. The second condition is that the masters know humanity is ready for new teachings. According to Benjamin Krem's master, they observe a new light in the aura of the human race and a dawning sense of unity. On the outer plane, this has been manifesting as people coming together in response to our various crises, uniting around some cause and finding their power to make some effect, some change. It is this light and the efforts of this growing and diverse body of people that shows the masters that we would be responsive to a great teacher. It's the rise of people power that has been a very important development in the world.
It sure has. Yeah, absolutely. 20 years ago, this did not exist.
It was starting to exist.
It was starting to.
It was existing, but it's gotten more so, and we're seeing people come together in very dangerous situations, but still coming together to protest.
Right, like the people in Iran.
Yeah. The third condition is that we're also transitioning to a new age. And this is part of a cycle that occurs every 20, 100 years or so. The increments are not equal. But each cosmic age brings in energies and qualities that shape and influence the societies that are created during that time. Transitions between ages are chaotic because the old energies are diminishing. They're losing their strength, and the systems created during that time are breaking down. At the same time, it's challenging to adjust to the new energies coming in and to create systems that reflect the qualities of that new age. So we are leaving the age of Pisces, which has given us some very important qualities. Individuality, idealism, and devotion are not qualities that we had 2,000 years ago. We had a herd mentality, apparently. We didn't really think for ourselves, but that has changed. And this has become a big step for us collectively. We also have division and fragmentation and fanaticism as extreme versions of these qualities. The Aquarian energy is that of synthesis. Benjamin Krem describes it very well when he said synthesis means the drawing together and creation of oneness, a unity out of disparate parts. You will find that is the aim of the evolutionary process. Unity in diversity, the greatest diversity in the fullness of unity. At this time, Aquarian and Piscean energies are of a similar strength, but with each day that passes, the Aquarian energy grows stronger and the Piscean energy diminishes a bit more. So what we're experiencing now are the mounting tensions brought about by our spiritual crisis that is focused through the political and the economic realms, and the tension due to the split between people who are responding to the new Aquarian energies and those who are holding on to the old Piscean ways. If we were left on our own to deal with this dilemma, it is questionable whether we would be able to resolve this dilemma and figure out the needed Aquarian structures within the short amount of time that we need them. But fortunately, we have a great teacher that has been emerging into the world to give us inspiration and guidance. This time it is Maitreya, and he's coming personally. And he's not coming alone, but he's bringing a group of masters who will also emerge and live amongst humanity. And this has not happened in 98,000 years. Maitreya is the head of the spiritual kingdom and the master of the masters. And as the head, he fills the position of world teacher and Christ. This means that he embodies the Christ principle, which is the energy of love. This love streams forth from him continuously, unconditionally, to everyone on the planet.
That actually seems amazing to me, just to imagine that. So whether I'm aware of it or not, that love is streaming forth to me right now, all the time.
All the time. All of us. Unconditionally, no matter what we've been or what we've done. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Maitreya fulfills the expectations that the major religions have for the return of a great teacher, each one having a different name. So the Christians expect the Christ, the Jews expect the Messiah, the Muslims expect the Imam Mahdi, the Hindus expect the return of Krishna or Kalki Avatar, and the Buddhists expect the fifth Buddha or Maitreya Buddha. Maitreya is here for these people, people of all religions and of no religions. He's also not here to found a new religion, but simply as a teacher in the broadest sense of the word. Maitreya is deeply attuned to the state of humanity at all times. He experiences, on the one hand, the joy that is everyone's birthright, and at the same time, suffering that people experience, especially the poorest and the people who are starving, millions of starving people.
Yeah, and we're having famines now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have a chart that shows this. Our information is that 1/3 of the world usurps and wastes 3/4 of the world's food and 83% of the world's resources, leaving the majority, 2/3, to make do with 1/4 of the world's food and 17% of all the other resources. These ratios came from Benjamin Krem's master in the late 1980s. Since then, the disparities have only increased. According to the World Food Program Hunger Map, there are currently over 800 million people who are undernourished. Maitreya has said about this situation that throughout the world, there are men, women, and little children who have not even the essentials to stay alive. They crowd the cities of many of the poorest countries in the world. This crime fills me with shame. My brothers, how can you watch these people die before your eyes and call yourselves men? My plan is to save these, my little ones, from certain starvation and needless death. Maitreya has also said, I come to show you the way forward into a simpler, saner, happier life together, no longer man against man, nation against nation, but together as brothers, shall we go forth into the country, the new country, the country of love, the country of trust, of beauty, and freedom.
Yeah, change is definitely needed. No doubt about that.
Maitreya's priorities include correct food, clean water, shelter, education, and health care for all people. There's currently no place on earth where all of these are available and regarded as a natural human right. You have to be able to afford these things. Some places are a bit closer to that, like Scandinavia, while others lack the wherewithal or political will to provide them.
Well, and I wanted to mention, I lived in Norway for a while, and I got to see firsthand how their system works. And it's true, in Norway, everybody pays much, much higher taxes than in the US or Canada. However, the result of that is that everybody's taken care of, and they don't have the kinds of problems that we have. I was able to see this firsthand. A friend of mine was a single mother with two small children, and during the early part of those children's lives, the Norwegian government supported her, paid for her home, her apartment, daycare for the children, and her university education. So she went to university for 4 years and got a degree in IT. And once she had that degree, then she was able to get a job that paid well, and she was able to support herself and her children, and in addition, pay those same levels of high taxes back into the system. So over time, she more than reimbursed the government for what they had given her. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really good idea. I think it really works.
Yeah, it would be nice to see that.
But people have to agree. They have to want to do that. I mean,
right?
That's the big difference, is that in those countries, the population is in agreement with that idea. Yeah. Well, not all of them. Some of them leave because they don't want to pay high taxes.
Yeah. Another priority of Maitreya is to resuscitate and restore the planet. Our planet is very sick and really needs to be healed. And our survival is very much connected with the planet's healing. And another thing is that Maitreya is here to show us how to live in peace. This is something we've never been able to do before, but he says it's possible. When Maitreya steps forward, he will teach us something called the art of self-realization. And this simply means practicing the honesty of mind, sincerity of spirit, and detachment. Being able to practice this will lead us to be able to live in peace with each other. To achieve world peace, we must have justice in the world. There can't be justice if half the world is in poverty. The tension created by the disparity between the developed and developing nations is a very dangerous situation because it has the seeds within it for a third world war that would be nuclear. On the other hand, creating justice would end war. To get justice requires the creation of trust. Because when there's trust between people, things that are impossible to do without it become possible. Nations would be able to talk to each other and work out their differences. To create trust, Maitreya says, share the resources of the world equitably. Maitreya will present a very practical, sensible way to accomplish this. And there is really no other way to resolve the tensions that we currently have in the world. Sharing the resources is the key that would unlock the solutions for the world so that we can meet these priorities. So sharing would create trust, real justice, and real peace. Maitreya has been in the process of emerging since 1977. I would like to leave you with this parting quote from Maitreya. He says, "Be not afraid of the many problems which arise now almost daily in the world. These events are transient, and soon men will come to understand that they have before them a future bathed in light." So
that's a wonderful quote. Thank you.
The message of hope. That. Yes, I think we need it at this time.
Absolutely.
I'll just say that we are volunteers of Share International, nonprofit organization, and that the source of most of our information came from Benjamin Krem, and some of it also came from Alice Bailey. They both put out a series of books. They both had a telepathic rapport with a master of wisdom. If you're interested in more information about what we have presented, there are some resources. We have a website, we have a YouTube channel, and we have a website where you could purchase books, and four of them can be gotten as free downloads. We also have a magazine that comes out 10 times a year, and you can find that on the same website.
Wow, thank you, Camille. That was really wonderful. And very complete.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad I had the chance to be here and to talk to you about this.
We're going to go on to meditation now. For those of you who'd like to continue doing that with us, I will start by saying the great invocation so we can all join in. So Camille, thanks for being here today. I understand you're not going to join us for the meditation, right?
No, I got pets in my room.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
Yes, I'll be glad to do it. And thanks for having me.
I'm going to simply go on to describe a little bit about transmission meditation for those who'd like to continue with us. So I'll go ahead and do that. It's a very simple meditation that is done in groups of three people or more. It's not a solo meditation, and the format is extremely simple. We begin by saying a mantra called the Great Invocation. We say it aloud together in unison. And once we've said it, we put our attention here on our forehead at the Ajna Center between the eyebrows. And if you've never done this before, you can just touch this spot with your finger to feel what that feels like from the inside of your head. And once you've felt it, then you simply return your attention to that spot whenever you notice that it has gone away. As long as your attention is centered here on this spot, you are in the meditation. And the way to help yourself bring your attention back is by sounding Om mentally, not with your voice, because you don't want to ground it on the physical plane, but in your mind. And that's how you can connect to the meditation if you disconnect, which happens to most of us. It's fairly common. And the next part is simply to explain that there are a few cautions. If you have a pacemaker or serious heart problems, you shouldn't do this meditation because the energies are fairly strong. Also, if you have any emotional or psychological imbalances, it's best not to. And also, if you're younger than 12, because your chakras haven't stabilized yet, this meditation is something that is done in conjunction with the Masters of Wisdom, who help us by sending energies, spiritual energies, through our chakras. And we benefit from that. But actually, we're helping them in a very great work that they do, which is to make those energies available to humanity. And so why is our presence a help? It's because since we are in physical bodies, which are vibrating at a lower rate, as those energies pass through our chakras, they automatically get lowered to a lower frequency. And once they're on that lower frequency, they can be absorbed by the mass of people. And so in this way, we help the masters by making those energies available. Whereas if the masters just send the energies as they are out into the world, the most people can't absorb them. So they aren't actually able to help. And the other thing is simply that we are doing this, as you know, because you're here with us today, we're doing it over Zoom. In the past, people used to meet in person, in someone's home, in a bookstore. But now we do it like this, and there are links. And so I guess the next thing is simply to begin. I'm going to say the great invocation aloud, and please join me, everybody, and we'll say it together. Although I won't hear you, but I'll know that you're saying it. And once we've said the great invocation, then we'll sit and hold our attention on the Ajna Center and meditate for half an hour. And that's really the whole of it. And I look forward to seeing everybody again. All right, I think it's time to begin. So I'm going to go ahead and begin by saying the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center, where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. And to those of you watching, if this information resonates for you, please share it widely. And just so you know, we have dozens of episodes you can watch at What in the World is Happening Now on YouTube and also on Share International Canada on Facebook. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you next time.